Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belville.
All right. Welcome back, Tokers and Tokettes. Glad to have you here in beautiful, sunny Scottsdale, Arizona. Temperatures in the upper 70s. The sky is blue. The orange trees are blooming. Nice change of pace from Portland, Oregon right now, let me tell you. It is awfully wet and cold in Portland this time of year. Got some questions coming up in our chat room, and want to remind you, we do have a chat room live here on CannabisRadio.com. If you're on the website, look for the player, and on the player, click the little cartoon balloon. That'll take you to the chat room, where Jackie's got a great question. She's from Texas, and she has an Oregon Medical Marijuana Program card. And she received a letter from the OMMP about changes on out-of-state qualifications. Yes, I do know something about that. The legislature has created now a residency requirement for an OMMP card. Up until this last session, Oregon was the only state in the United States that had no residency requirement for its medical marijuana program. And this has led lots of people to come from out-of-state to Oregon to get their card. Gary Stork from Wisconsin, a great activist up there with Is My Medicine Legal Yet, has come to Oregon every year for like 10 years to get his card. And not that his card does anything in Wisconsin, other than maybe provides him some measure of an affirmative defense attempt if he gets busted in Wisconsin. But nevertheless, a lot of these patients like to get their medical marijuana card, especially if they're going to be visiting, say, Arizona, Nevada, Michigan, Delaware. There's a few states out there, Maine, I think, that have a reciprocity program for other states' medical marijuana cards. You got their card, you can shop in their dispensaries, and you can, well, some of them you can shop in their dispensaries, but all of them you can possess and use your cannabis. So no, I'm afraid, Jackie, that your card, once it expires, you're not going to be able to renew it in the state of Oregon unless we do something about that residency requirement. Now, some good news on that angle is that our lawyers, Leland Berger and some others, are fighting this because they believe it violates the Oregon state constitution. So we'll keep you posted on that. And in other news from Oregon, I got this great call from a new political challenger to Ted Ferrioli in Eastern Oregon. Let me play this for you.
Why, good evening, and thank you for carrying this message. This is Stormy Ray. I am running for state senate, and I'd like everybody to know if there is anything that they can share with me on changes that we can make to make all of our neighborhoods better, and places that our families can grow, please call me. I can be reached at area code 541-889-5030. And have a most delightful day. God bless.
Thank you, Stormy Ray, for calling in. Folks, if you don't know Stormy Ray, she was the original chief petitioner of Oregon's medical marijuana law back in 1998. She is a quadriplegic and a longtime activist. She's challenging one of those Eastern Oregon legislators that is anti-pot. There's another Eastern Oregonian, Bree Larson, who's a dispensary owner. She'll be challenging another one of these Eastern Oregon legislators. And this is the best thing you can do, folks. You don't like those people in office? Take their office. Find someone who will take their office. In these little counties, it doesn't take many votes to get elected. And if we get all the cannabis community behind our people, we can win. All right, stay tuned. We'll be back with more on Toker Talk Radio after these messages. I'm Radical Russ, live in Scottsdale, Arizona.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Gondrepreneur.com, your guide to the cannabis business world. Gondrepreneur.com is a comprehensive resource for cannabis professionals and entrepreneurs. Download the Gondrepreneur app on your smartphone or tablet to catch up on cannabis industry news, scroll through our daily job listings, and learn about successful cannabis companies, executives, and investors. Gondrepreneur.com, helping Gondrepreneurs grow.
Maui Wowie. Acapulco Gold. California Kush. Our strains stretch everywhere, too.
This is the Cannabis Radio Network.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest-growing business association in the fastest-growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
The Russ Belville Show. Chat is for friends 18 and older. We expect our chat to be civil, mature, and free from excessive profanity. If you don't like these rules, there are approximately 6 billion other chat rooms with lower standards.
Ignite the conversation on some trending topics along the Cannabis Radio social media network. Join our crew of thousands on our Cannabis Radio page on Facebook or at Canna Radio, C-A-N-N-A Radio, on Twitter. Plus, look for our Facebook and Google Plus pages for all of our original programs and connect with Dr. Dina, Kyle Cushman, Dr. Mitch Earlywine, Nurse Heather, Doc Rob, the hosts of Gondrepreneur, and more. Connect with the growing Cannabis Radio social crusade at Canna Radio on Twitter or search for Cannabis Radio on Facebook, Google Plus, and Instagram and grow with us.
Warning, hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that. This is Dan Michaels from danmichaelsaudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on cannabisradio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. 8 after the hour here, and we just recently, just in the last segment, very recently, played that clip from Stormy Ray. And the reason why this is so important that she's running is she's running against this senator named Ted Farrioli. Now, Ted Farrioli is both my favorite and least favorite Republican in the Oregon legislature. The reason he's my favorite Republican is because he's the guy who was behind the early sales bill. He's the guy that said, wait a minute, you're going to legalize in July, but they're not going to have shops for another 15 months. What do we want to do? Just support black market dealers? So he was the guy that said, look, just let the existing dispensaries sell to everybody. And that, of course, has been a boon for me. So I appreciate that part. But what makes him my least favorite Republican is the other thing that he ushered through last session. And that is something I call the West Idaho Compromise. Now, it's kind of a joke because Oregon, geographically speaking, is separated by the Cascade Mountain Range. So if you can think of the West Coast, right, the Cascade Mountains are about 100 miles inland from the coast. So everything from that mountain range west to the ocean is what I think of when I think of Oregon. You know, University of Oregon, the Ducks, liberal politics, hippies, Eugene, Oregon Country Fair, Portland, all of that to me is Oregon. When you go east of the Cascade Mountains, you might as well be in Idaho. And I'm originally from Idaho, so I know of which I speak. Eastern Oregon is culturally, politically, religiously Idaho's twin. Might as well be a whole different state once you cross the Cascade Mountains. This was reflected in the vote for our Measure 91. When you looked at it county by county, the western counties, almost all of them, passed Measure 91. When you look at the eastern counties, almost all of them rejected Measure 91. Now, in Measure 91, we had a part for local control. And you pretty much have to in these initiatives for marijuana, you have to include some measure of local control. The ability of a city or a county to regulate, restrict, or even ban marijuana commerce and marijuana licenses. And when I say you have to have that in a bill, I'm not saying that like it ought to be in a bill. I'm not saying that like I want it to be in a bill. What I'm saying is, politically speaking, if you want this to have a chance of passing, at least for now, you have to include some measure of local control. So some of these more rural, more conservative, more religious areas can succumb to their prejudices and fears about cannabis and the bigotry they have against the people who use it and futilely try to ban that. We have to at least give them that opportunity, right? So in Measure 91, we wrote that into the initiative that if you wanted to ban, if you thought your little podunk city was too pristine for a pot shop, you could ban it. But you couldn't just ban it with your city council. You couldn't just ban it with your county commission. You have to take it to the people for a vote. That seems fair, doesn't it? You know, if your city's going to ban pot shops, shouldn't the people have some say in that rather than a 3-2 vote on some city council? So that's what was passed. Measure 91 was passed, and the statewide criteria for banning licenses was a vote of the people. Democracy in action, right? Well, Ted Farrioli didn't like that. Ted Farrioli and the Eastern Oregon Republicans did not like that a bit. From their perspective, and this was the argument they made, was that we just had a statewide vote on Measure 91, and their counties voted against it. So why make their counties vote again to say whether or not they want a pot shop when they already rejected legalization? That was the argument. The argument that they'd have to go through another election just to determine something they already knew, which is that their people hate pot. So Ted Farrioli was able to get through the legislature the West Idaho Compromise. And what the compromise was that if your county voted more than 55% against legalization, you didn't have to follow that rule about a public vote. If your county voted more than 55% against Measure 91, your city council or county commission could just ban on its own. And of course, once this happened, lots of them did. The OLCC keeps putting out this list of cities and counties. And last time I checked, it was like 16 counties and 50 cities that have already passed these bans preemptively. And the voters don't get any say in it. Seems to me kind of anti-democratic. And what is the point of having a statewide vote to set a statewide law if you're then going to allow the legislature to carve out special exceptions for people who really, really, really don't like that law, even though they lost at the ballot box? But that's exactly what they did. And as far as I'm concerned, it set up a terrible precedent. What if the next initiative that comes up is an initiative to label GMO foods, and the western counties all vote for it and the eastern counties all vote against it? Do they get to be exempted from the GMO, the statewide GMO labeling? Suppose the state of Oregon finally succumbs and decides to have an initiative to have a sales tax, and all the western counties vote for it and all the eastern ones don't. Does that mean there's not going to be any sales tax in the eastern counties? Or is it just marijuana where we're going to have these special rules? So Stormy Ray fighting against Ted Farrioli, trying to take his seat, is definitely a shot across the bow to tell him that the cannabis community is incensed by this. We are furious about this, and we're going to take your job. So you can get in touch with Stormy Ray. Phone number again is 541-889-5030-5030. And you can always email me, radicalruss@gmail.com, if you want to learn more about how to help her candidacy. And by the way, that message comes from our studio line. You know, our phone line here is 971-533-7111. What I may not have told you recently is that's a 24-hour line. So if you're calling live between 3 and 5 or 4 and 5 Pacific in our calling hour, yeah, I'll answer live and we can have a chat. But if you just have an announcement or you want to tell people something or you just want to, you know, give a shout out, call anytime. 971-533-7111 and leave a voicemail. And if we like your voicemail, we'll play it on the show, like this one.
Hey, yeah, Russ. Couple of things going on in Oregon. Little backlash from the opt-out. And one is Bree Malarkey of Shady Grove is running against House of Rep District 55. And in Malheur County, Stormy Ray is going to challenge Senator Ted Farrioli for his state Senate seat. So anyway, a lot of exciting news, and look for Stormy Ray to be on Facebook and a bunch of other things. So thanks a lot, Russ. See you later. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you for your call in. Really appreciate that. And this is what the idea of the Russ Belville Show has always been about. You know, we have this tagline, the voice of the marijuana nation. That's not my voice necessarily. That's everyone's voice that can be a voice in the marijuana nation. That's what we're talking about. And if you want to leave a message, get your opinions out there, get your announcements out there. We'd love that. Furthermore, we're going to have more and more interviews, updates, if you will, from our specific statewide correspondents. You heard last week from Fran Janik in Vermont on what's going on in legalization there. Later this week, I think Thursday or Friday, we're going to have Rick Thompson on from Michigan. He's going to give us a rundown on what's going on with Michigan legalization and currently the Michigan legislature trying to pass all sorts of bills to thwart their medical cannabis industry. So we will talk about that just as soon as we can. Let's go to our phone lines at 971-533-7111 because Wiz Calico's on the line. How you doing, Calico?
Good. How you doing, Russ?
I'm fantastic. It's sunny in Arizona.
Good, man. I'm glad you made it down there safely. I was just listening to you talk about Stormy Ray's run against Ted Farrioli and just the kind of the idea that we need to be supporting cannabis-friendly candidates and you know, local races as well as federal elections. And just wanted to remind any of your listeners who are in the Super Tuesday states to be out and voting because obviously they have polls are closing in about an hour in a lot of spots. And just wanted to make sure they're getting out and supporting Bernie Sanders, who obviously has a bill to deschedule cannabis in the Senate. But I feel like a lot of our community is kind of letting him down and not really raising the word and awareness about it.
Thank you for mentioning that. It's happening in Illinois, Missouri, Ohio, Florida, and North Carolina. They're all voting. And some of them are open primaries. I forget which states are open, so it doesn't matter how you're registered, you can go vote. Some of them are closed primaries where you have to be a registered Democrat to go vote. I say go vote. And if they don't let you vote, well, then complain and ask for a provisional ballot. But do what you can, because as Calico mentions, Bernie Sanders is the only candidate running right now who's calling for the descheduling of marijuana.
And I actually think that Illinois has same-day registration, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, why not? Go down there, find out if you can register that day. You know, go down there. Just being in the line with other people that are getting ready to vote and all that can be really exciting and a really affirming feeling to know that you're being a part of something bigger, that you're being a part of our American democracy.
Absolutely. I definitely think that we're going to have a lot more cannabis-friendly candidates running in a lot of the elections now that the industry starts to prop up, and hopefully they'll be able to start getting a little bit of money built up and able to spend in some of these elections, because it's definitely going to be crucial moving forward.
Yeah, we need to see more of that from the marijuana industries. I mean, they're making a lot of money now, and if they don't recognize listen there.
I know nothing.
Well, Calico, you caught me on a 420 break.
All good. I think that was perfect timing, man. It was my way of sending a little aloha to you.
Well, aloha to you, too. Mahalo for the Pakalolo. We'll take a break. It's 420. Happy 420 to everyone out there. Thanks, Coleco, for calling in. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care, brother.
Chronicling the latest cannabis industry news and headlines.
Well, with four states with tax and regulate and the District of Columbia.
The state of cannabis.
Oh my God, it's refreshing. We have people that generally wouldn't speak on behalf of cannabis for fear of retribution, fear of losing your practices, fear of many of those things, and find ourselves in a place that we finally can.
Bringing you fact-based news and views and keeping listeners on the pulse of what's happening in the industry today. The State of Cannabis. On demand anytime, only on CannabisRadio.com.
The Russ Belville Show, providing dictionaries to drug czars since 2009.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson, or Norman. And I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
How high do you like your profit margin? CannabisRadio.com.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that. This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. 22 after the hour, and I want to catch up on some of the other stories that we covered last week. Give you a couple of updates here. One of the issues we've been covering in depth here on the Russ Belville Show has been this push by state legislatures to pass bills requiring drug testing for public benefits. Usually we're talking about SNAP, which is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or what some people call food stamps, even though there are no stamps anymore. They're all cards. It also may refer to what is typically called welfare, TANF, the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, and in some cases, unemployment benefits, drug testing for unemployment benefits. And that leads me to this story on KENS5 out of San Antonio, which notes that the state of Texas 3 years ago passed a law requiring drug testing for unemployment benefits. And the law requires that people in certain occupations have to take a drug test before they can receive their unemployment. In the past 3 years, not a single drug test has been performed for anyone to get their unemployment because the state is still looking at who they're going to test and how they want to do it. Now, the problem with this is the Texas Workforce Commission says that they haven't started because they're waiting for the federal government to tell them who can and cannot be tested. For now, they're thinking people in healthcare and transportation fields. But here's the issue that I really want to drill down to. They provide this quote from a person named Kelly Graves, who he's lost his job and he's applying for unemployment benefits. But he says he's willing. He says he's more than willing to get drug tested as a part of the application process, saying, quote, "It's like a job. You have things that you need to do when you're looking for work, and it's like work-related," end quote. And I wish I could just grab these people that have this thought, this idea.
well, if you have to drug test to get a job, you should have to drug test for unemployment.
That never stopped to consider, why do we have to drug test to get the job in the first place? Drug testing is ineffective. It's impersonal. It violates our privacy. It's disgusting if you think about it. And it tells us nothing about whether someone's a productive, vital employee. It tells us nothing about whether they're an addict to any sort of drug. And in most cases, all it tells us is someone has been a pot smoker sometime in the recent past. As you know, probably know, most of the drugs of abuse, illicit drugs, so to speak, flush out of your system real quick. You could, on a Friday night, party hardy, snort lines of coke, smoke some meth, shoot some heroin, drop some acid, and get drunk while you're doing it. And if they drug tested you on Monday, you'd probably be clean. Those drugs flush out of our systems very quickly. Cannabis, on the other hand, cannabinoids, stay in our system for days, weeks, or even months after last use. So when they do these drug tests, the people they're most likely to catch are the people using the least harmful drug. I mean, think that your company could be hiring regular meth users, regular heroin users, regular cocaine users, and never know it. But if you smoked a joint last week, you could lose your job. So I wish these people that had this attitude of, well, if I have to drug test for a job, you should have to drug test for unemployment, would start to think, why do we have to drug test for a job? Stop accepting this oppression as the default. Stop accepting this program as necessary. This drug testing for unemployment or drug testing for welfare benefits, whatever it might be, first of all, has been shown to be a failure in every state that's tried it, in the sense that when they get positive results, they get far fewer positive results than what they get out of the general public. In Florida, when they tried this, Florida's law drug tested everybody who applied for welfare. It was later found to be unconstitutional because you can't test everybody because that's suspicionless testing and that violates the Fourth Amendment, unreasonable search and seizure. But for a while, Florida did it. They did it for 4 months. They drug tested everybody who applied for any sort of welfare. And what they found is the people applying for welfare tested positive at a rate about 2.8%. The general public test positive at a rate about 8%. So the people testing for welfare were far less likely to turn positive on a test than people who are out there in the general workplace. Why is that? Well, drugs cost money. If you're unemployed or you need welfare, you don't have $300 to drop on an ounce. And this idea that we should drug test people for unemployment, drug test them for welfare. It's even gotten to a point now where you got people from our side saying we ought to drug test politicians. Well, if they're going to pass all these laws to drug test us, we ought to drug test them. No! The answer to your oppression is not the oppression of others. The answer to your oppression is to end your oppression, is to fight your oppression. And that's what I'm doing here. I'm not stopping until drug testing is over in this country with respect to any sort of benefit, with respect to any sort of job. And I mean any sort of job. I'm talking no drug testing for pilots, no drug testing for train car conductors, no drug testing for teachers, no drug testing for hazardous materials workers, no drug testing at all. At least random pre-employment or suspicionless drug testing. Now, if there's an accident, if there's a catastrophe, a tragedy of some sort, then there might be cause to drug test somebody. But even then, that drug test should be limited to whether or not they're drunk at the time, high at the time, whether they're actually impaired by the drugs at the time. And with what we know about cannabis, we cannot determine that through testing. we can pretty much say if you got active cocaine or meth or heroin or alcohol in your blood, that yeah, you're messed up. But we can't say that with cannabis. So all we do when we drug test in an accident situation is we pick out the cannabis consumers who happen to get in an accident and we cause them to lose their jobs. And you know what the unintended consequence of that is? Cannabis consumers not reporting accidents on the job. See, if you want to have a safe workplace, if you want to make sure employees are reporting accidents and reporting workplace safety violations, you need to end drug testing, because that drug testing creates a perverse incentive to not report safety issues. So Texas, still working on that, still hasn't tested a single person for unemployment for their drug testing. There's another quote from this story that says, I think they should apply the law because a lot of people just want to live off the benefits. This is the idea that someone's going to get unemployment, somebody's going to get welfare, and they're just going to spend all the money on drugs and let their kids starve and whatever else. So the answer to that is to not give them any benefits and make sure their kids starve and go homeless. See, people don't think through these things. And there's another part of it that angers me, because at the heart of this, it's an infantilization of the poor. See, in America, we have this kind of, we have this feeling, we have this culture that believes that if anybody works hard, they can pull themselves up by their bootstraps, they can make it in this country. Therefore, if you're poor, you must deserve it. You must be a lazy, no good bum. If you weren't a lazy, no good bum, why, you'd have a job. You'd go get a job and you'd be successful and everything'd be fine, right? Well, no, that's not the way it works. But a lot of people think that. And so they think that if you can't get a job, you're poor, you're undeserving, then obviously you need guidance. You need extortion. You need coercion from the state to make the right decisions. You see this when people propose laws with SNAP benefits, you know, supplemental nutrition benefits, where they say, well, you can't buy steak or lobster or shellfish with your welfare because that's luxury food. At what point does our granting of benefits to an American citizen turn them into a slave of the state? That's what we're talking about here, slavery. We're talking about controlling another human being's free will, forcing that person on benefits to have to buy beans and rice because they can't buy beef and shellfish, which is dumb in the first place too, by the way, because shellfish, seafood, tends to be a lot healthier than a lot of the crap that poor people usually buy, right? That's why we have fat poor people in this country, because we have crap for food that's high in calorie and bulk as far as satisfying your hunger, very little in nutrition and other sorts of benefits. But it's this idea that we need to force them. We need to force them to not buy steak, to force them to not buy pot, to force them to not buy shellfish, because they're poor and they have no willpower and they're wards of the state and we got to care for them as if they're little children. Well, that's not the America I believe in. I believe in America that's a free country where citizens have the freedom to make their own decisions, even if they're bad ones, even if they're making those decisions with the welfare money we have granted them. Because if we don't give them that freedom to make bad decisions, we're doing nothing more than becoming their caretakers, becoming their nannies. And that's not a country I want to live in. Now, none of this is to say that there isn't abuse of welfare, there isn't fraud in welfare, and that there isn't some people who are shiftless and want to live off the dole. I'm not denying that exists, but what I am telling you is it's by far the exception to the rule. I grew up surviving thanks to SNAP benefits, thanks to TANF. Numerous times, me and my little brother would have been homeless. That homelessness may have led to declines in school performance. Those declines in school performance may have led to less opportunities for me in life. And that may have led to me not having this job talking to you right now. Maybe I'm trapped in a cubicle somewhere. Maybe I'm working retail for the rest of my life. Who knows? But these are the kind of extenuating circumstances when it comes to our policies that people don't think about. They don't think about people that are poor through no fault of their own, whose businesses crashed or whose companies laid them off, or people who got injured or can no longer do the last job that they were able to do. It's time for a little bit more compassion in this country. Maybe if we smoked all a little bit more cannabis, we could find that. All right, we got more state updates coming up when we return. Stick around.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Great websites today need expert web design and development and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolute, Carlsberg, and Nestlé trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
Seed to sale, clicks to conversions, and more. You're listening to the Cannabis Radio Network.
Coming soon to a city near you, Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. Get all your cannabis accounting, legal, and compliance questions answered by their knowledgeable panel of industry experts who want to help your cannabis business boom. Whether you're a grower, dispensary operator, or a newcomer to the field, your cannabis business needs Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. For information on upcoming events, visit CannabisFinanceBootcamp.com.
Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals, or at least they pay me to say that. A public service message from CannabisRadio.com and the Russ Belville Show.
The smoke is rising, and the next crop of podcasts devoted to cannabis providers and enthusiasts are ready to be harvested.
Welcome to the Cannabis Radio Network,
founded by respected rainmakers who have been producing award-winning podcasts for over a decade. Industry headlines, business updates, medical reports, marketing, and e-commerce education rolled up perfectly for your consumption.
Let's grow together. The Cannabis Radio Network. CannabisRadio.com.
Remember, friends, there's more to life than marijuana. I just can't remember what it is. Why'd I come in here?
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. 38 after the hour. Polls are closing soon on the East Coast in the Super Tuesday. What is it? Super Tuesday 3? It's like a trilogy now. Florida, Ohio, Missouri, North Carolina, and Illinois all voting in Democratic primaries today. You know, we're feeling the burn here at the Russ Belville Show, so let's hope Bernie pulls off another couple of upsets like he did in Michigan. Looking forward to that. Some more state updates for you. West Virginia has passed its bill requiring drug testing for welfare. It's now sitting on the West Virginia governor's desk waiting a signature. That will bring, I think that'll be 14 states now. If that passes, there'll be 14 states that mandate some sort of drug testing for welfare. And it's silly, too, how they have to do it. Because I mentioned to you how Florida did it for 4 months, and they drug tested everybody who applied. And the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that, no, you can't do that. That's unconstitutional, because merely being poor and applying for welfare is not enough probable cause, not enough reasonable suspicion, I should say, to dictate the need for a drug test. It's a, you know, illegal search and seizure kind of thing. So you can't drug test everybody. So what the states have been doing lately And I think Utah pioneered this. Maybe it was Georgia. But anyway, what they've been doing lately is issuing a quiz. You got to take a quiz when you're applying for welfare. And one of the quizzes, I forget which state, but one of the quizzes was literally like just three questions. Like, have you ever been arrested for a drug charge? Are you currently on probation for a drug charge? Have you ever used illegal drugs? And if you answer yes to any one of those three questions, aha, now we have the reasonable suspicion necessary to drug test you. Well, folks, how many of you would answer those questions honestly? Do you suppose there's some people out there that may have used marijuana at some point in their life that are lying in order to go on and get their welfare benefits without being drug tested? So here's, it blows my mind that the idea here is that we're going to stop the druggies from getting welfare because, you know, those terrible druggies, those druggies, they got no morals and they're the little children. We got to take care of them, those druggies. But we'll trust them to answer the quiz honestly. Okay. Well, of course, this has led to ridiculous situations like some states where they literally had only one person who both failed the quiz and failed the subsequent P test. We've had other states where they get 30, 40 positives, and what they find out is for every positive they got, it cost them $10,000 or something in the fees that it cost to implement the test for everybody. It cost them more money to implement the tests than the money they would have saved not giving that person welfare. So it's a money loser even when they do catch people. Now, we got some other state updates as well. Hawaii and Alabama are two states that are currently poised to pass industrial hemp legislation. So far, we have industrial hemp in California, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Illinois, Kentucky, Indiana, Maine, Michigan, Missouri, Nevada, New York, North Carolina, Maine, Oregon, Utah, Minnesota, Missouri, Tennessee, and North Dakota. And again, hemp, of course, is non-psychoactive. It's an industrial crop. There's no logical reason to ban it whatsoever. But Hawaii is moving forward with a bill. It's House Bill 2555. And what they want to do is they want to legalize industrial hemp. It's the most robust industrial hemp bill, they say. It unanimously passed the Hawaii House. It's now in the Hawaii Senate. 4,500 people in Maui have signed a petition for industrial hemp in Maui. And part of what is driving this in Hawaii is that the Hawaiian Commercial and Sugar Company is no longer going to be growing and processing sugarcane on the island of Maui. Well, that's a huge business. That's a huge industry in Hawaii. Production of sugar. And so now this hemp bill, HB 2555, is being touted as a replacement crop for all those sugarcane farmers to be able to produce hemp and to be able to continue having farms. So great news on the Hawaiian front. In Alabama, it's legislation for research on growing industrial hemp, and it would only apply to the Alabama Department of Agriculture and universities, you know, Alabama universities. And this is kind of like the medical marijuana of hemp, right? Like, people weren't ready for recreational legalization, so we gave them a baby step of medical marijuana to get them to legalization. Well, industrial hemp, the baby step has always been these research programs. We're not going to let the farmers just go out and start planting this non-psychoactive industrial crop. We're going to just let universities plant a little 30-acre plot and study it for a while. So it's kind of a half measure, but it's not a useless measure. There is still a lot of study that needs to be done on industrial hemp as far as what type of cultivars grow best in which conditions, what type of cultivars are the best ones for specific applications. Like, what hemp would you grow if you're trying to get fiber versus what hemp would you grow if you're trying to get seed versus what hemp would you grow if you're trying to get, whatever else, CBD for medicinal purposes, right? So there is still a lot of study that needs to happen. I do worry, though, that we've got, you know, 8-9 states now that have these research programs going on, and I worry that they may be duplicating a lot of effort. I hope that these state agriculture departments are collaborating with one another on these hemp experiments so that the same experiment isn't being run in 3 different states at the same time, that we can have some sort of collaboration on this. That would be very, very helpful. But this is good news. Hawaii and Alabama moving forward on industrial hemp. Now, another piece of news that I found fascinating, I wanted to share with you, has to do with New Zealand. And it's very interesting because I did not realize that medical marijuana is kind of legal in New Zealand, but only if you're importing it into New Zealand with your recommendation for medical cannabis from another country. Isn't that weird? So if you're from Oregon and you've got a medical marijuana card and you get on a plane at PDX with an ounce of weed, which you're not supposed to because it's illegal to export it now out of Portland, but suppose you did, and you flew to New Zealand, you'd be legal to have that ounce on you as long as you had your medical card. That is a loophole in the New Zealand law that makes it so that you cannot charge people from overseas who have their medical marijuana cards. There had been some talk in the New Zealand legislature about changing that loophole. But according to Associate Health Minister Peter Dunn, he confirmed it was potentially possible to bring a medicinal cannabis product prescribed overseas for their own use for a maximum of 1 month, saying, quote, that has been in the law for over 40 years and applies to all medicinal products, not just cannabis-related products. He concluded, I am not proposing any immediate action in respect to this provision, but will monitor the situation if and when cannabis-related products become an issue. So isn't that weird that I could fly to New Zealand with an ounce so long as I had a medical card, but if I gave that ounce to a cancer patient in New Zealand, they could get busted? Isn't that strange? Why would you have a law that says people from outside your country can have this product, but people inside your country, oh, no, far too dangerous, far too dangerous. What is it that makes cannabis safer when someone overseas has a medical card for it? It's just weird. It's just like, if the reasoning you're putting forth that cannabis has to be illegal is because it's this deadly, dangerous drug, then it's always a deadly, dangerous drug, isn't it? Oh, well, no. If they're using it for medical purposes, then that's okay. Well, then why can't a New Zealand doctor recommend cannabis for medical purposes? Oh, because that's not our law. We don't allow that because it's a deadly, dangerous drug. Yeah, but you're allowing people from other countries' doctors to describe that it's not a deadly, dangerous drug. Are you saying that New Zealand doctors are somehow less informed or less capable than a doctor from England or the United States? There's just no logical consistency to any of this. It's just maddening sometimes. These strange, strange laws that make it legal in one place, illegal in another place, when nothing's really changed about the product itself. We have one of these weird situations actually happening in Oregon right now, where in Portland, they've preemptively decided that there cannot be drive-through cannabis shops. You cannot have a drive-up window where you make your cannabis purchase like you would a cheeseburger or a burrito and then drive off with your cannabis purchase. They've proactively banned that so that if you want your cannabis, you have to drive to the cannabis shop, park in the parking lot, get out of your car, go up to the door, show your ID, go into the place, pick out your cannabis, have it put in a bag, take it out of the place, go back into your car, and then drive it home. Because then it'll be safe. Like, what is it about driving up to a drive-through window that suddenly introduces massive amounts of danger to cannabis? Is it the idea that I'm going to drive up to the window and they're not going to check my ID? No, we could have that for sure. They could check IDs that way. Is it that you're going to sell me the cannabis at the drive-thru window and then I'm going to immediately light it up and drive down the road? Well, if that's the case, why couldn't the person who parked their car do the same damn thing? Cannabis doesn't get any more dangerous whether or not you pick it up at a drive-through window or you had to walk into the store. These preemptive moves by legislatures and city councils to protect us from the danger of cannabis before any sort of danger has even been realized. It's not like we've had drive-through dispensaries and we've seen a big problem with them. They're coming up with solutions to problems that don't even exist. And all they do is inconvenience us, inconvenience the cannabis consumer. I mean, there are places I've gone to in the South, I think Louisiana. I've never been to Louisiana, but I think Louisiana has this law. I think Texas has it too, maybe some other places in the South, where they have drive-up liquor stores. You can actually drive up to a liquor store and order, like in Louisiana, they have open container too. You can have an open container in your car. So you can actually drive up to a liquor window, get yourself a mixed daiquiri in a cup with a straw, and drive off with it. Now there is a danger. There's somebody who's going to be drinking and driving. But for some reason, that's okay with the most deadly, dangerous, addictive drug we have, alcohol. But we could never allow that for cannabis. No, no, no. All right, stay tuned, folks. We're going to close shop in just a second. We return from these commercial messages.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Cannabis Confidential with Dr. Dina. Candid.
I want to give you the inside story.
Captivating.
I want to introduce you to my kind and amazingly talented friends.
Compelling.
We get to meet some of the most amazing cannabis activists and warriors around.
Listen in as medical marijuana pioneer Dr. Dina shares never-before-heard stories, chats with cannabis insiders and celebrity friends, and provides invaluable perspective and insight into one of the fastest-growing industries in the world.
I want to share with you what was once confidential information. Let's expose the truth, discuss the issues, and learn the facts.
Cannabis Confidential, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Marijuana is not addictive, but listening to the Russ Belville Show is.
It's time for cannabis facts about Alzheimer's from Robert Platshorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A new Florida study in the journal Molecular and Cellular Neuroscience found that cannabis promotes the growth of healthy new brain tissue. It can slow the effects of Alzheimer's and may, in fact, be able to halt it entirely. A long-term study by Ohio State University's Professor Gary Wenk concludes that people who regularly use marijuana get Alzheimer's at a much lower rate than others. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
Every strain, every sale, every medical study. Keep it right here on the Cannabis Radio Network.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired-up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
I have a package here for Radical Rick. Is there a Radical Rick here? How about a Rick Russ? Any Rick Russ? Somebody named Freddie Barack has sent him a package? Anybody? What is that? Sounds like a skunk. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
All right.
Winding things up here from beautiful, sunny Scottsdale, Arizona, reminding you that tomorrow you want to tune in because we got all sorts of great shows for you on Cannabis Radio. I'm on live at 3 o'clock Pacific time, followed at 5 o'clock Pacific time by the live Stoner Jesus show. And then at 6 o'clock, make sure you tune in for the new Tommy Chong podcast. Only on CannabisRadio.com. Tommy and his son Paris will be talking to you 6 o'clock Wednesdays Pacific time here on CannabisRadio.com. A couple other quick stories to wind up the day. Interesting one here out of the New York Daily News that is entitled, San Francisco dentist admits to shipping 30 pounds of marijuana per month to New York City. Wow. So the story is, this dentist in San Francisco was shipping 30 pounds a month to New York. He's 63 years old. And he is facing 3 years probation. What? Month after month after month. 30 pounds a month. 3 months probation. 3 years probation, excuse me. 3 years probation in the Manhattan Supreme Court next month. According to prosecutors, he was making $100,000 a month dealing that weed to New York. And he's going to get 3 years probation. That's great, I guess. That's pretty fantastic. You'd think this guy would be doing some severe time, but apparently not. Of course, it should be noted that Jerome Weitz is a 63-year-old white man. All right, so let's go to this other story. New York Post, getting a lot of New York news today. New York Post says Americans like legalized pot a lot more than Girl Scout cookies. According to the statistics, the Girl Scouts pulled in $780 million in 2015. Legal marijuana pulled in $3.4 billion. $3.4 billion. They say the total cannabis sales in America, including illegal sales, is 40 to 45 billion a year. So think about that, folks. $40 to $45 billion in cannabis sales. We've only managed to legalize $3.4 billion of it. There is still up to $42 billion worth of taxable sales on the table in the United States of America to help states deal with their budget deficits, to help fix crumbling schools, to fix potholes and roads. But some places would rather just bust long hairs and young people and black people and anybody they can catch with a little bit of weed on them. Sure, we'll be nice in a few years when we can look back at this era of American history like we look back on slavery or Jim Crow, or for that matter, alcohol prohibition, and ask ourselves, what the hell were we thinking? Well, that's all the time we got for today, but join me tomorrow live in Scottsdale, Arizona. We'll have another great show, including our Hemp Day Hump Day segment with our good friend Doug Fine. For everyone here at CannabisRadio.com, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers!
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.